The consensus organizing model is basically you start with the people who are suffering from whatever the problem or the conditions are, and you start with them and you talk to them about if you know the miracle question, if you could wake up tomorrow and have found a solution, what would that look like? And so we went into downtown and interviewed every homeless person we possibly could about, are you hungry? What do you eat for food? Do you have any health restrictions? Do you have diabetes? Do you have all your teeth? Where do you go to get your food? What's up with food stamps, right? How does that whole system work? And we found that a lot of them would sell their food stamps because the only food that you could buy with, now it's called CalFresh, is food that you would prepare at home. But they don't have homes to prepare the food at, so they don't have refrigeration. So a lot of the food would go bad.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome back to another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. We are sitting here in an open vacant lot in City Heights, San Diego. I'm joined by Andrew Moss. How you doing, Andrew?
I am doing well, Mill. It's good to be here. This is definitely not our usual recording studio, that's for sure. I'm sure our listeners can hear in the background a little bit of car noise. We are actually sitting inside a 67 Aladdin travel trailer. It's, I believe, 80% powered by solar energy. It's the new location of the dojo run by Carlos McRae.
Yeah, so listeners will know that Startup Talk is all about entrepreneur founders, high-tech life sciences, investors, and a large part of the ecosystem. But that's not all. We want to get all voices of our startup community on this podcast. And so with that, I am so excited to introduce and welcome as a guest Carlos McRae, who is co-founder and CEO of The Dojo, a more-than-coffee spot where young people and underserved communities can go to express themselves, improve themselves, and buy culturally reflective drinks, food, and fresh dojo apparel that they can call their own. Even more awesome, they will do this with an 85% solar-powered vintage travel trailer completely retrofitted as a coffee trailer. Prior to The Dojo, Carlos created The Fresh, a mobile food truck that serves hot meals to homeless while accepting CalFresh. The Fresh continues to run and is making profit, and two more have launched serving the aging population. In order to pursue The Dojo, Carlos currently teaches social work at Cuyamaca Community College part-time. Carlos, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So could you start off by giving us the backstory of the founding of The Dojo?
Yeah. So the idea for The Dojo came about when I was a part of Startup Leadership Program and started the accelerator for a different project that I had in mind, and throughout the process had to pivot. And in the pivot, went back to the community, which is here in City Heights, spoke with the 16 to 24-year-olds that I had been working with since 2006, and, shared some of what it is that I had learned from SLP, and we came up with the idea of the Dojo Cafe, the community coffee shop.
Before you dive into more specifics about the Dojo, what is Startup Leadership Program?
Startup Leadership Program for me has been a game changer. It was a paradigm shift. I come from the social work field, so learning about venture capitalism, assumptions, marketing, all the stuff that goes into starting a business was new to me. I did a lot of Googling during the classes, but we would meet. Startup Leadership Program is a six-month program that meets every other week on a Wednesday, and you learn from professionals in the community about all the varying facets of what it takes to start a business.
Cool. So how did you come up with the name The Dojo?
So we came up with The Dojo because, as you know, traditionally you watch movies, the dojo is a place for martial arts, right?
But well, are you saying that because I'm Asian, man?
Maybe. No. martial arts is more than just the fighting aspect.
Five deadly venoms, dude.
Right. Right. So it's about finding your way, and that's what we're trying to do in City Heights. We're trying to help the young people, the 16 to 24 year olds, learn about, you know, what it is that they want to do, how to get there, and also that there's more to life than what traditionally we're prescribed is, you know, you go to high school, college, and then you go work for a long time. It's you know, you could either practice your craft, you could follow your passions, you could start your own business. Endless possibilities.
Totally agree with that. It's not one size fits all, right, Carlos?
Right.
No, I think you're coming up from it from a unique perspective where you had the social work side and now you're doing this entrepreneurial side and combining the two together. It's, you don't see it very often here. And what you've got the setup here is really, really cool.
Yeah, that was the goal. I had started a nonprofit called Get Empowered Today, and I got tired of spending 70-80% of my time fundraising and then not being able to spend the time with the youth that I wanted to serve. And so it was, hey, let's take a look at this nonprofit model and see if we could figure out a way to make it more sustainable. I believe I needed to learn from business, right, to about sustainability and generating revenue. And I think there's something to be had behind combining the ideologies of for-profit companies along with the, you know, double and triple bottom lines of nonprofit and having a social contribution.
Prior to Dojo, you ran a mobile food truck. And so how did that experience prepare you for the Dojo?
So the fresh, the coffee trailer, I don't know if you've ever worked on a coffee trailer. It's rather unique and pretty interesting. And that prepared me in so many ways. For one, we used the consensus organizing model to even come up with the idea for the food truck.
What?
Yeah. So
explain that, please. I don't even know what that is.
The consensus organizing model is basically you start with the people who are suffering from whatever the problem or the conditions are, and you start with them and you talk to them about if you know the miracle question, if you could wake up tomorrow and have found a solution, what would that look like? And so we went into downtown and interviewed every homeless person we possibly could about, are you hungry? What do you eat for food? Do you have any health restrictions? Do you have diabetes? Do you have all your teeth? Where do you go to get your food? What's up with food stamps, right? How does that whole system work? And we found that a lot of them would sell their food stamps because the only food that you could buy with, now it's called CalFresh, is food that you would prepare at home. But they don't have homes to prepare the food at, so they don't have refrigeration. So a lot of the food would go bad. So it
sounds like a vicious cycle.
It's a real vicious cycle. In social work, when you're dealing with somebody and you're working with them, trying to help them solve their problems, you figure out where they're at. Right? Because you can't start ahead of them. You got to start right where they're at. And then that's the only way that you could get buy-in. And so we took that model and applied it to business.
And for you, why is the intersection of creativity, food, and underserved communities important to you?
It's important to me because food is historically, no matter which culture you go to, food is the thing that brings people together. Or it can be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Maybe here in the States, you got to think about barbecuing. Right? That's what we do, or the holiday traditions. But in other cultures, a lot of times, most meals, are big family events because there's a lot more people in the home. And it was, hey, how do we empower a community? Right? Let's take an idea of how do we empower a community? Well, you got to get the community to come here. Well, you bring them with some excellent coffee and some amazing food that represents who they are, right? You walk into maybe some coffee shops and it's a bunch of prepackaged food that doesn't reflect what they eat at home. We wanted to change that. We wanted it to be a place where you come and it smells like home, right? And it's food at the that you're used to eating. And then let's start having a conversation.
So as I look at this lot, it's pretty much vacant and still has some work to be done on it. What do you envision this place to look like once you achieve your goal?
Yeah, so I envision this lot. It's 10,000 square feet of potential and hope. That's how I look at this lot. Right now, the international market here is on every Wednesday from 10 to 8 p.m. And that has about 8 vendors. We want to expand and have multiple vendors here every day, whether that's by proxy through us, we're selling their food. We'd help promote their wholesale license and stuff like that. But we would promote their food and get people to show up and start taking an active stand in their community and start spending money in their community so that it could go back into their community, right? And we want to have open mic nights, storytelling, because there's a lot of stories to be told with the immigrants and the refugees and the minorities that live here, things that the youth need to learn, right? And they might not be learning that in traditional sources, such as at school. And then we also want to have education, you know, financial education, and healthy eating, healthy living, how to own your own home, because we want to make sure that the people here could also be sustainable and not get priced out eventually.
So you're going to pack all of that value into 10,000 square feet then?
10,000 square feet.
So why did you, what's the origin of this 67 Aladdin travel trailer? Why this for the coffee?
Yeah, the origin, this trailer came from Oregon, Bend, Oregon. And when we were looking at what our business model was going to be, with such a big focus on social impact and reinvesting our money into the community, we needed to try to figure out a way to keep our overhead low. And so in exploring different business models, this travel trailer that happened to be retrofitted for coffee was just a perfect opportunity. It's significantly less than opening a storefront. And then it also allows us to be on a lot like this where we could have concerts and stuff with the residents of the community.
So I first came across you through Dean Rosenberg, a previous guest on Startup Talk. And you told me about the Indiegogo campaign you just concluded. So can you tell me how the Indiegogo campaign went and what did you learn from that experience?
Oh, the Indiegogo campaign was a crazy little roller coaster. I've never raised funds before. And so that was really interesting. I don't even like asking for money. and so that was a challenge that I quickly had to overcome. But we raised almost $15,000 with 138 backers. And to me, the significance of the Indiegogo campaign was the number of people that we got to support us, and then the connections that we've made because of the Indiegogo campaign, right? Money is important. Money is what greases the wheels, but it's the other stuff, the support, the love and encouragement, and the connections that we've made that was really special. And that's what's going to hit us home.
Most definitely. So for example, Dean Rosenberg is the VP of due diligence on the board of directors of Tech Coast Angels San Diego. He heard about you through, he was mentoring a startup leadership program. He told me about your Indiegogo campaign. He arranged a meeting, a site visit to the dojo today. He pulled along Caitlin Wege, who's on the board of a number of social enterprise foundations. Caitlin pulled in David Lin, who is a money manager for social enterprises, and they actually manage a fund to invest in enterprises such as yours. And so absolutely, with regards to, it's not so much how much money you raised through Indiegogo campaign, but how many different people you've reached and touched through that.
Right. And I think one of the things that I learned from Indiegogo is the importance of being humble, right? Take it back to the dojo. It's all about humility. Don't overestimate your opponents. Well, in business, you could be your worst enemy, your biggest opponent if you start limiting yourself. And you're absolutely right. The connections being made, and then also being able to have honest conversations and let people know, I may not know how to do that, but I built a team around me that we could figure it out because we all have different areas of expertise.
So complementary skills.
Right.
Sure. And I actually got to be here for the meeting before our podcast interview here, and I got to meet some of your co-founders. Tell us, how did you meet your co-founders and how did you kind of all come together on this one goal of serving the community?
I met my co-founders over the years in different ways, whether it's through personal relationships or work or even, you know, old high school buddies that in the process of trying to start something, then, you know, word spreads and then you end up finding out that somebody that you know is an expert or has expertise in a field that you need. And so it was a lot of trying to decide, though, which personalities would work well together, because after starting the food truck, I learned that follow through is probably one of the most important characteristics that you need in a teammate, because without that, then you just are left waiting. And so it was, you know, just hitting my networks, hitting the networks of my friends to find people who had experience in the areas that I needed, and then also people who had follow through and who could take responsibility, right? And when things don't go well, they'll say, yeah, I messed up. and that won't happen again. And this is why.
I mean, what you're saying there is great. I mean, the fact that you're all still able to get along together, even though it's obviously been tough starting out, as any startup entrepreneur knows, it's never easy trying to raise money and keep things going. And the fact that you've all stuck together and all found complementary jobs that that work really well, it's great.
Right.
So, what are some common pushbacks to the dojo business model from locals, communities, or other groups, Carlos?
Well, because we're a social enterprise, we get a lot of confusion about, hey, well, why aren't you a nonprofit? Or as a for-profit, you're not generating, you know, 20x conceivably with one location anyways. And so that's part of the pushback is having to define, we're constantly having to define, which is kind of sad, why we're trying to use a for-profit to reinvest money into a community, and to definitely, you know, have more than one bottom line.
I think you're trying to model good business behavior. And so if you set up as a nonprofit, the people in the community are thinking that's the only way to go. But if you set up a viable, vibrant business that's drawing members of the community together, they'll get into their minds that, hey, they can do this too for their passion and their business goals.
Oh, absolutely. The goal for the dojo is to leave the dojo in the hands of the community. We already have one 20-year-old that I worked with at my nonprofit who's on our part of the co-founding team. She has equity in the company, and I tell her all the time, this is going to be yours one day, yours and your families and all the people that live in City Heights, and we're going to go off to another community and do this. Part of the model that we're using, it, we didn't really want like an angel investor, so to speak, because... or some big donation in the sense that where we didn't have to pay back or some weird terms, because then that's not repeatable. If we go to Logan Heights or Southeast San Diego, and they're like, oh, well, how'd you get started? Ah, well, we got lucky with this. That's not repeatable. So all the money that we've raised, we want to pay back. Even the Indiegogo funds, I know that's not traditional, but we will be sending out emails letting people know, hey, if it's okay, we'd like to pay this back so that we could say, hey, we pay back our, you know, all the funds that we raise, so that way when we go to open up another location, we could tell the next community, hey, you could do it.
That's a powerful story, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. You don't hear that very often, where you have people wanting to give back the money that they've eventually raised. It's you've done so well to raise the money then to give it back.
Right. Yeah, makes more work for us, but it's all good.
And do you have any interaction with the San Diego startup ecosystem at all?
No, aside from a startup leadership program, I do not. And I realize that I need to, because there's still so much for me to learn. Startup leadership program gave me a great foundation, but such as Startup Week, I've read a lot about Startup Week and I've heard about that, San Diego Startup Week. And I really want to be involved and participate in other events that the startup ecosystem offers.
Absolutely. Could you tell, actually, now that I'm looking at this 10,000 square foot lot, how did that come about? How did you get access to this space to use the dojo as a cornerstone?
So I will tell you that being a social enterprise, when you're really pitching the mission and not so much the revenue model, it creates a lot of opportunities for overlap with nonprofits. And that's how this opportunity came to be. We have overlap and outcomes with the City Heights City Community Development Corporation, who is right now in charge of this lot. And so we were able to work out a partnership with them, because we have similar outcomes. We have similar goals and ambitions.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but would you say that City Heights is the most ethnically diverse area in the region with the highest number of immigrants?
Absolutely. And it's the densest part of San Diego.
Yeah, I believe during the talk today, you were saying that we have about 6,000 to 7,000 immigrants moving in per year into San Diego, and a lot are coming here, correct?
Correct.
Wow. I mean, and are they from different, well, obviously different countries, but what countries are they mainly?
Different places in Southeast Africa, Iraq, they're from all of the Karen, which is the Hmong community as well, the Vietnamese community. There's a ton. It's everything. It's super diverse.
And from your observations, how do the locals that live here for years interact with the new immigrants coming in?
So you know, that is a, that's probably a study, should be a study in and of its own, because of the informal economy that is here in City Heights. A lot of them, you could live in City Heights and not speak English, as long as you speak one of the main languages out here, right? And so they have a lot of stores and community, people in the community, kind of like mentors or leaders that help integrate, as well as there's several nonprofits such as the International Rescue Commission and NAMI who help with the immigrants and refugees, help assimilate and acculturate to the community.
So I don't think we took a deep dive into the business model for the dojo. So could you talk a little bit about that, please, Carlos?
The business model for the dojo is we're a coffee shop. So we will be selling coffee, some good coffee. It's, technically, we're third wave coffee, so gourmet coffee. We will be having ethnically minded drinks such as horchata lattes, as well as café soda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and the authentic café soda, which that gives me the cold sweats because it's way too much caffeine, but it tastes good. As well as having the food from the immigrants and refugees who are going through the International Rescue Commission, and they're trying to start their own businesses. We want to sell their food, so that way we could help grow their businesses as well as offer food here at the dojo. And then we're going to have a profit sharing model with the employees that work at the dojo, and then a lot of the other revenue is going to be going back into the community events and the programming that we'll have.
So obviously, in order to support all this, you must have a side hustle to kind of bring in cash, and we all have side hustles. I've got a side hustle.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah, absolutely.
Andrew has
too.
A side hustle.
Yeah, so I only kind of know side hustles. That's what I've done my whole life. I'm working at Cuyamaca Community College right now, teaching social work. I just picked up a second class, so that's the most that I'll be taking on is two classes, intro to social work.
But that's also an opportunity for you to get to know new people as well and tell them about the mission of the dojo.
Absolutely. Not only is it that, but since I'm teaching intro to social work, I'm able to have a platform where there's going to be a new wave of social workers, and I'm letting them know, hey, it doesn't have to look like traditional social work. You know, if you guys have business aspirations, or if you have a mission, or you see a need in a community, or even within the organization that you're working in, there's always a way to find an answer, to find a solution that's going to be based on the people and not necessarily based on finding the money, which is often what happens in social work.
Yeah, I'm sure you're meeting a lot of like-minded people doing teaching this class, because, I mean, if they're all wanting to go into social work, it makes sense that, you know, that you're teaching this class to them. And what kind of feedback have you gotten from them by telling them about the dojo?
A lot of them want to come work at the dojo. so that's I think that's good feedback. I like hearing that. And as well as a lot of them, you know, aren't used to hearing about business as social work. And so they have a lot of questions about that. You know, and a lot of questions about, well, where would I go to learn this stuff? And it's like, well, you're going to have to go educate yourself, because you're not going to learn it in traditional social work school. So they really like the idea. They like the idea that they could help create their own future and not necessarily have to always be an employee of a nonprofit or a government agency.
So you are now, Carlos, a serial social entrepreneur. So what tips would you have for entrepreneurs just starting out on their own journeys?
I would say that it needs to be something that you really enjoy, because you're going to be thinking about it 24/7, literally as you sleep. When you wake up, it's the first thing on your mind. And you know, when life brings its challenges, right? Because we all have our journey. Sometimes you need that thing to help pull you through, right? The bigger mission and the bigger vision. The other thing I would say is be humble. If you don't know something, that's okay. You know, the reality is there's a lot that we don't know. And a lot of people, I think, struggle with, I don't know, maybe being afraid of other people's perceptions that you don't know. The thing that I think has been my biggest asset is just being humble and asking a ton of questions and really looking for leveraging partnerships, right? Why recreate the wheel? And then also, hey, can you share some knowledge with me, because you have experience and I don't? And I pride myself on being able to learn from other people's mistakes. I'm a mess up on my own enough as it is, right?
So. Absolutely. Yes, you definitely learn from your own mistakes, that's for sure. And yeah, there are people out there who want to help. You know, you don't have to just stick it out alone. People are there to, you know, they like being asked for help, and it you know, it makes them feel good and it helps you at the same time. It's a win-win, really.
Absolutely. And if you don't talk about your dreams, then how is anybody going to help you? Right? So this is right all on. I do. This is all I talk about, and then next thing you know, somebody's like, "Oh, I know somebody."
Right on.
So you got to talk about your dreams.
Just lastly here, a class that potentially could include a business aspect in the social work. Do you see that as a future in the educational world?
I would love to see that happen. If I could be a part of that, that'd be cool. Although I'll be the first to say I don't have necessarily enough background yet to develop that, but that should be part of it. And I also think part of like an MBA program should be, hey, you know, there should be more than one bottom line.
Yeah. What do they call it? The triple P's, people, profit, planet.
Right. Right. That should be a standard. That should be a standard in all business, in my personal opinion.
Right on. So, Carlos, for your personal or professional life, what additional help from people, companies, organizations in the region do you seek?
Knowledge. So if anybody has some knowledge or partnerships that they think that we could benefit from, especially in City Heights, but eventually we'll expand to other communities such as Logan or Southeast San Diego or National City. If you have any interest in the dojo or would like to be a part of it or even learn more about it or potentially be a partner, yeah, let me know.
Okay, so as we wrap up this episode, Carlos, how can people reach out to you or reach out to the dojo? Where can people find you?
We're on Instagram and Facebook at The Dojo Cafe. Our website is thedojocafe.com, and our email is smiles@thedojocafe.com.
Excellent. So if you want to reach out to us here at the podcast, you can tweet us at Startup Talk Pod, tweet me at personal@MillardYChan. You can email us at startuptalkpodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on our website, startuptalkpodcast.com. Well, that wraps up another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Carlos, thank you so much for spending time with Andrew and me.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.